Chapter 28. A peep into Spain, account of the origin and services of the Ahmednugger irregulars. Headquarters, Morella, September 16, 1838. I have been here for some months, along with my young friend Cabrera. And in the hurry and bustle of war daily on guard, and in the batteries for 16 hours out of the 24, with 14 severe wounds and 7 musket balls in my body, it may be imagined that I have had little time to think about the publication of my memoirs. Inter arma silent lieges in the midst of fighting be hanged to writing, as the poet says, and I never would have bothered myself with a pen, had not common gratitude incited me to throw off a few pages. Along with Ora's troops, who have of late been beleaguering this place, there was a young Milesian gentleman, Mr. Toon O'Connor Emmett Fitzgerald Sheeny, by name, a law student, and member of Gray's Inn, and what be called Baa of Trinity College, Dublin. Mr. Sheeny was with the Queen's people, not in a military capacity, but as representative of an English journal, to which, for a trifling weekly remuneration, he was in the habit of transmitting accounts of the movements of the belligerents, and his own opinion of the politics of Spain. Receiving, for the discharge of his duty, a couple of guineas a week from the proprietors of the journal in question, he was enabled, as I need scarcely say, to make such a show in Ora's camp as only a Cristino general officer, or at the very least a colonel of a regiment, can afford to keep up. In the famous sortie which we made upon the 23rd, I was of course among the foremost in the melee, and found myself, after a good deal of slaughtering which it would be as disagreeable as useless to describe here, in the court of a small inner podesta, which had been made the headquarters of several Queenite officers during the siege. The pesetero or landlord of the inn had been dispatched by my brave chapel churis, with his fine family of children. The officers quartered in the podesta had of course bolted, but one man remained, and my fellows were on the point of cutting him in 2 10,000 pieces with their borrachios, when I arrived in the room time enough to prevent the catastrophe. Seeing before me an individual in the costume of a civilian, a white hat, a light blue satin cravat, embroidered with butterflies and other quadrupeds, a green coat and brass buttons, and a pair of blue plaid trousers, I recognized at once a countryman, and interposed to save his life. In an agonized brogue, the unhappy young man was saying all that he could to induce the chapel churis to give up their intention of slaughtering him. But it is very little likely that his protestations would have had any effect upon them, had not I appeared in the room, and shouted to the ruffians to hold their hand. Seeing a general officer before them,
I have the honor to hold that rank in the service of His Catholic Majesty,
and moreover 1 6 feet 4 in height, and armed with that terrible cabasilla,
a sword so called, because it is 5 feet long, which is so well known among the Spanish army.
Seeing, I say, this figure, the fellows retired, exclaiming, Adios, Corpo di Bacco, Nosotros, and so on, clearly proving,
by their words,
that they would, if they dared, have immolated the victim whom I had thus rescued from their fury.
Illins, shouted I, hearing them grumble, away, quit the apartment. Each man, sulkily sheathing his sombrero, obeyed, and quitted the Camarilla. It was then that Mr. Sheeny detailed to me the particulars to which I have briefly adverted, and, informing me at the same time, that he had a family in England who would feel obliged to me for his release, and that his most intimate friend the English ambassador would move heaven and earth to revenge his fall, he directed my attention to a portmanteau passably well filled, which he hoped would satisfy the cupidity of my troops. I said, though with much regret, that I must subject his person to a search. And hence arose the circumstance which has called for what I fear you will consider a somewhat tedious explanation. I found upon Mr. Sheeny's person 3 sovereigns in English money which I have to this day, and singularly enough a copy of the New Monthly Magazine, containing a portion of my adventures. It was a toss-up whether I should let the poor young man be shot or no, but this little circumstance saved his life. The gratified vanity of authorship induced me to accept his portmanteau and valuables, and to allow the poor wretch to go free. I put the magazine in my coat pocket, and left him and the podesta. The men, to my surprise, had quitted the building, and it was full time for me to follow, for I found our sallying party, after committing dreadful ravages in Orr's lines, were in full retreat upon the fort, hotly pressed by a superior force of the enemy. I am pretty well known and respected by the men of both parties in Spain. Indeed, I served for some months on the Queen's side, before I came over to Don Carlos, and, as it is my maxim never to give quarter, I never expect to receive it when taken myself. On issuing from the podesta with Sheeny's portmanteau, and my sword in my hand, I was a little disgusted and annoyed to see our own men in a pretty good column retreating at double quick, and about 400 yards beyond me, up the hill leading to the fort, while on my left hand, and at only 100 yards, a troop of the Queenite Lancers were clattering along the road. I had got into the very middle of the road, before I made this discovery, so that the fellows had a full sight of me, and whiz, came a bullet by my left whisker, before I could say Jack Robinson. I looked round, there were 70 of the accursed malvados at the least, and within, as I said, 100 yards. Were I to say that I stopped to fight 70 men, you would write me down a fool or a liar. No, sir, I did not fight, I ran away. I am 6 feet four. My figure is as well known in the Spanish army as that of the Count de Lachana, or my fierce little friend Cabrera himself. Ahagan! Shouted out half a dozen scoundrelly voices, and 50 more shots came rattling after me. I was running as the brave stag before the hounds, running as I have done a great number of times before in my life, when there was no help for it but a race. After I had run about 500 yards, I saw that I had gained nearly 3 upon our column in front, and that likewise the Cristino horsemen were left behind some 100 yards more, with the exception of 3, who were fearfully near me. The first was an officer without a lance. He had fired both his pistols at me, and was 20 yards in advance of his comrades. There was a similar distance between the two lancers who rode behind him. I determined then to wait for number one, and as he came up delivered cut 3 at his horse's near leg off it flew, and down, as I expected, went horse and man. I had hardly time to pass my sword through my prostrate enemy, when number two was upon me. If I could but get that fellow's horse, thought I am safe, and I executed at once the plan which I hoped was to effect my rescue. I had, as I said, left the podesta with Sheeny's portmanteau, and, unwilling to part with some of the articles it contained, some shirts, a bottle of whiskey, a few cakes of Windsor soap, and I had carried it thus far on my shoulders, but now was compelled to sacrifice it malgermoy. As the lancer came up, I dropped my sword from my right hand, and hurled the portmanteau at his head, with aim so true, that he fell back on his saddle like a sack, and thus when the horse galloped up to me, I had no difficulty in dismounting the rider. The whiskey bottle struck him over his right eye, and he was completely stunned. To dash him from the saddle, and spring myself into it, was the work of a moment. Indeed, the two combats had taken place in about a fifth part of the time which it has taken the reader to peruse the description. But in the rapidity of the last encounter, and the mounting of my enemy's horse, I had committed a very absurd oversight. I was scampering away without my sword. What was I to do? To scamper on, to be sure, and trust to the legs of my horse for safety. The lancer behind me gained on me every moment, and I could hear his horrid laugh as he neared me. I leaned forward jockey fashion in my saddle, and kicked, and urged, and flogged with my hand, but all in vain. Closer the point of his lance was within 2 feet of my back. Ah! Ah! He delivered the point, and fancy my agony when I felt it enter through exactly 59 pages of the New Monthly magazine. Had it not been for that magazine, I should have been impaled without a shadow of a doubt. Was I wrong in feeling gratitude? Had I not cause to continue my contributions to that periodical? When I got safe into Morella, along with the tale of the sallying party, I was for the first time made acquainted with the ridiculous result of the lancer's thrust as he delivered his lance. I must tell you that a ball came whiz over my head from our fellows, and entering at his nose, put a stop to his lancing for the future. I hastened to Cabrera's quarter and related to him some of my adventures during the day. But, General, said he, you are standing. I beg you, Chiadit Lustra, take a chair. I did so, and then for the first time was aware that there was some foreign substance in the tail of my coat, which prevented my sitting at ease. I drew out the magazine which I had seized, and there, to my wonder, discovered the Cristino lance twisted up like a fish hook, or a pastoral crook. Ha, 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 said Cabrera, who is a notorious wag. Valdepena's Madrilenos, growled out Tristany. By my cachuca di caballero, upon my honor as a gentleman, shrieked out Rose Darrells, convulsed with laughter, I will send it to the Bishop of Leon for a crozier. Gahagan has consecrated it, giggled out Ramon Cabrera, and so they went on with their machacas for an hour or more. But, when they heard that the means of my salvation from the lance of the scoundrelly Cristino had been the magazine containing my own history, their laugh was changed into wonder. I read them, speaking Spanish more fluently than English, every word of my story. "But how is this?" said Cabrera. "You surely have other adventures to relate?" "Excellent sir," said I have. And that very evening, as we sat over our cups of Tertulia Sangaree, I continued my narrative in nearly the following words. I left off in the very middle of the Battle of Delhi, which ended, as everybody knows, in the complete triumph of the British arms. But who gained the battle? Lord Lake is called Viscount Lake of Delhi and Laswari, while Major Gaha nonsense. Never mind him, never mind the charge he executed when, saber in hand, he leaped the 6-foot wall in the mouth of the roaring cannon, over the heads of the gleaming pikes, when, with one hand seizing the sacred paishkish, or fish which was the banner always borne before Sandhya, he, with his good sword, cut off the trunk of the famous white elephant, which, shrieking with agony, plunged madly into the Maratha ranks, followed by his giant brethren, tossing, like chaff before the wind, the affrighted Kitmatkars. He, meanwhile, now plunging into the midst of a battalion of Kinsamas, now cleaving to the Chinese screaming and ferocious Babachi, asterisk rushed on, like the Simum across the Red Saharan plain, killing with his own hand, 140 THR, but never mind, alone he did it. Apostrophe sufficient be it for him, however, that the victory was won. He cares not for the empty honors which were awarded to more fortunate men. Asterisk the double-jointed camel of Bactria, which the classic reader may recollect, is mentioned by Suidas in his commentary on the flight of Darius, is so called by the Marathas. We marched after the battle to Delhi, where poor blind old Shah Alam received us, and bestowed all kinds of honors and titles on our general. As each of the officers passed before him, the Shah did not fail to remark my person, asterisk, and was told my name. Asterisk, there is some trifling inconsistency on the major's part. Shah Alam was notoriously blind. How, then, could he have seen Gahagan? The thing is manifestly impossible. Lord Lake whispered to him my exploits, and the old man was so delighted with the account of my victory over the elephant whose trunk I use to this day, that he said, let him be called Gajputi, apostrophe or the Lord of Elephants, and Gajputi was the name by which I was afterwards familiarly known among the natives, the men, that is. The women had a softer appellation for me, and called me Mushook, apostrophe, or Charmer. Well, I shall not describe Delhi, which is doubtless well known to the reader, nor the siege of Agra, to which place we went from Delhi, nor the terrible day at Laswari, which went nigh to finish the war. Suffice it to say, that we were victorious, and that I was wounded, as I have invariably been in the 204 occasions, when I have found myself in action. One point, however, became in the course of this campaign quite evident, that something must be done for Gatagan. The country cried shame, the king's troops grumbled, the sepoys openly murmured, that their Gujpati was only a lieutenant, when he had performed such signal services. What was to be done? Lord Wellesley was in an evident quandary. Gatagan, " to be a subaltern is evidently not your fate. You were born for command, but Lake and General Wellesley are good officers. They cannot be turned out. I must make a post for you. What say you, my dear fellow, to a corps of your regular horse? It was thus that the famous corps of Ahmednugger irregulars had its origin. A guerrilla force, it is true, but one which will long be remembered in the annals of our Indian campaigns. As the commander of this regiment, I was allowed to settle the uniform of the corps, as well as to select recruits. These were not wanting, as soon as my appointment was made known, but came flocking to my standard a great deal faster than to the regular corps in the company's service. I had European officers, of course, to command them, and a few of my countrymen as sergeants. The rest were all natives, whom I chose of the strongest and bravest men in India, chiefly Pythons, Afghans, Karamzadas, and Kalyans. For these are well known to be the most warlike districts of our Indian territory. When on parade and in full uniform we made a singular and noble appearance. I was always fond of dress, and, in this instance, gave a carte blanche to my taste, and invented the most splendid costume that ever perhaps decorated a soldier. I am, as I have stated already, 6'4" in height, and of matchless symmetry and proportion. My hair and beard are of the most brilliant auburn, so bright as scarcely to be distinguished at a distance from scarlet. My eyes are bright blue, overshadowed by bushy eyebrows of the color of my hair, and a terrific gash of the deepest purple, which goes over the forehead, the eyelid, and the cheek, and finishes at the ear, gives my face a more strictly military appearance than can be conceived. When I have been drinking, as is pretty often the case, this gash becomes ruby bright, and as I have another which took off a piece of my underlip, and shows 5 of my front teeth, I leave you to imagine that seldom lighted on the earth, as the monster Burke remarked of one of his unhappy victims, a more extraordinary vision. I improved these natural advantages, and, while in cantonment during the hot winds at Chittibaberry, allowed my hair to grow very long, as did my beard, which reached to my waist. It took me 2 hours daily to curl my hair in 10,000 little corkscrew ringlets, which waved over my shoulders, and to get my mustaches well round to the corners of my eyelids. I dressed in loose scarlet trousers and red morocco boots, a scarlet jacket, and a shawl of the same color. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.